Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta on Wisconsin Public Radio. Don Coscarelli is the youngest filmmaker ever to have a feature film distributed by a major studio. He was only 19 years old when he sold his critically acclaimed film, Jim, the World's Greatest, to Universal Pictures. But it was Don's third film that put him on the map, the indie horror movie, Phantasm. Don wrote, shot, directed, and edited it. Phantasm was released in 1979 and spawned four sequels. The film is now considered a cult classic and has appeared on many critics' lists of best horror films.
Somebody once told me that horror films make money. It's funny because today, that's absolutely the truth, because some of the most successful films are the horror and genre films. But at any rate, I got this bug in my mind that that maybe my next film, I need to do something a little more commercial. And mm-hmm. So I decided to try doing horror.
Yeah, and that was a great decision. Your third film, probably your best-known film, the 1979 horror film Phantasm, which, speaking of getting back to this idea of doing all this work, you wrote, directed, shot it, and edited it. For those of our listeners who aren't familiar with it, can you give us a brief synopsis of Phantasm without revealing too many, if any, preferably no spoilers?
Well, basically, it's a pretty simple story about a 12-year-old boy who lives with his older brother, who's a little older, about 20s, and these two brothers are recent orphans. Their parents have died, and so the younger brother is really trying to come to grips with the loss of the parents and potential loss of his brother who wants to leave. And so, he has an active imagination, but he might just be the sharpest knife in the drawer in that town. And he starts to notice some strange things going on. There's a series of murders. One of their friends is killed. There's a funeral up at this odd mortuary cemetery complex called Morningside. And our hero, Mike, witnesses some strange things and notices this strange, very enigmatic and sinister mortician.
Yeah, played by Angus Scrimm, yeah.
The funeral is about to begin, sir.
And he and his brother and their neighborhood friend, who's the ice cream vendor, played by Reggie Bannister, get involved in trying to learn what the nature is going on up here, and pretty soon it takes some really strange, frightening turns.
Mm-hmm. So where did you get the idea for Phantasm?
Well, that's a really good story. Truthfully, I had attended a few funerals in my young age, and it was just remarkable to me the way our society deals with death. Mm-hmm. I mean, personally, I have always had a genuine fear and concern about what happens after you die, shared with probably every other member of my species. this imagery that goes on and the way that we treat, because it's different in other societies, but here, there's this strange practice of men dressed in dark suits, and they're in these mausoleums, and you give them the dead body of your deceased relative, and it goes away into sort of experimentation or scientific operating lab, and then the corpse comes back looking kind of like your relative, but not exactly, mm-hmm. and, long funeral coaches, all this imagery, really good stuff, and I thought, this would be a great setting for a horror film. Combined with the fact that favorite sci-fi movie from the 50s I loved, it was called Invaders from Mars, mm-hmm. and that had a storyline where there was a kid where there was a Martian ship landed in his backyard, but nobody believed this boy when he told them that he saw it. And I thought that idea of having a kid who saw strange things, but he was the only one pretty much on his own to try to figure out the nature of it.
I was messing around up at Morningside Cemetery, and I saw something. Something really scary.
What was all in your mind?
And not really knowing it, but I ended up making a mashup of horror, fantasy, and science fiction.
Yeah. Wasn't part of the storyline of Phantasm, the Chrome Sphere, didn't the idea for that part of the story come from a dream you had when you were 15 years old? Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely true. It's maybe one of the only dreams I've remembered vividly enough to put into a film, but I'd had a dream where I was just being pursued down long corridors by this silver chrome orb. And it stuck with me. And while I was writing Phantasm, I thought, well, this would be an interesting device to try to work into the story. And so I did. And at the time, never having any idea what kind of an impact that would have, because that image of the sphere and the way that the sphere, it's a, you know, without giving away too much, it becomes a deadly killing device. And the impact of that sequence really woke audiences up.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of people never forgot it. You know, we'll be introduced to people and they go, oh, you did Phantasm. Oh, yeah, I don't know if I know that movie. And then all I have to do is just put my hand with a couple fingers out. I go, you know, the one with the ball, like yeah. that. And they immediately remember.
Yeah, it's very appropriate. That dream inspiration is very appropriate because Phantasm, the way it plays out, like the first time I saw it, I thought, wow, this is, you know, so much like a nightmare, very surreal and very dreamlike. And I would even say that Phantasm and David Lynch's Eraserhead are two of the best cinematic representations of a nightmare that I've ever seen. Did you always know that Phantasm was going to rely heavily on dream logic, or was that something that just developed as you were writing the screenplay?
You know, first off, thank you for that praise and lumping me in with David Lynch, because, wow, am I in awe of his work. I was, you know, a little younger, a little more confident, possibly, like the young are, and I was willing to take some risks and tell this story in a different kind of style. And, you know, as I was making the movie, I started to not worry so much about whether the audience was comprehending what I was doing exactly. And that's a risky thing to do. Thank God it worked out. But I do think that by having it grounded with some real elemental scares throughout, kept audiences' attention.
You made this film in the late 1970s before CGI. So how did you achieve the special effects of the silver orb zooming around the funeral parlor?
Well, truthfully, cellophane tape and a lot of fishing line. You know, we did everything the old-fashioned way. Special effects, well, they're much like magic tricks. I mean, you have to, for a very short period of time, create an illusion that works. And if you just break it up into its component parts, a lot of times each little component is doable. Mm-hmm. It's just trying to do it all at once is where nowadays they do these effects all at once and have characters morph into other characters all through these very complicated digital effects. But for instance, with that flying sphere, we had to figure out a way to make the thing fly. And, you know, we tried a lot of exotic things with piano wire and that, none of that worked. And, you know, somebody at some point just said, well, why don't you just chuck the damn thing? Mm-hmm. And it was right on. And for that particular shot, we just had somebody throw the sphere, but we shot it in reverse and in slow motion.
Yeah.
And that created the effect. When we wanted it to round a corner, we could use fishing line and put it on a little string and have it whip around that way. So it was a function of, you know, simplifying and then just trying to figure out an innovative way of making that little small effect work.
You had a really dangerous experience while you were working on Phantasm, didn't you?
Well, I had a lot of them. You know, in my book, True Indie, I mentioned a couple. We had to do some, I shot a sequence with a car chase, and in the chase, the lead star had to pop up through the sunroom with a shotgun. And I wanted to get a close, intimate shot, so I was riding in the trunk. You know, again, being young, being ignorant, didn't know that even when you're shooting with blank charges, that they are dangerous. And there have been cases after that time, you know, where actors had actually died from being too close to the proximity of a blank pistol.
Not here.
Yeah, and so anyway, so I was like 2 feet away from a shotgun loaded with blank shells, and the actor was just doing his great action hero stuff, shooting right at me with the camera. And to protect my face, we put this camera pad over my face and taped it on, figuring it with some aluminum foil, figuring if anything came out, that would protect it. And it did. It's just that all this burning stuff hit the pad and lit it on fire. And then there was this mad dash to try to pull this burning pad off my face before it torched my skin, which thank God we were able to.
Yeah, that's very fortunate, yeah. The music and the sound design in Phantasm are a big part of the film's success. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, sure can. I was lucky enough on my very first film to meet a terrific composer, super talented man named Fred Myro. And Fred teamed up with a friend of his named Malcolm Seagrave, and the two of them crafted this really beautiful, insidious theme that just became the icon of Phantasm, is this little eight-note theme mm-hmm. that he created. It was so powerful and so important. What was wonderful about Fred and Malcolm also is that both of them were really unconventional composers. I mean, both of them had come up through classical music. Fred was an apprentice to Leonard Bernstein at the New York Philharmonic.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, and he'd had a Guggenheim Fellowship and all kinds of things. But he also loved to produce rock bands. So he was writing these wonderful symphonic pieces and also, you know, producing some pretty hardcore rock stuff. So when they came to approach doing Phantasm, they were really interested in working with unusual instruments. And that was really cool stuff. I mean, there's a chase scene that's completely scored to Indian tablas. One of their favorite tools, you know, in some of the really scary parts is they would take a drumstick and scrape it across a cymbal, and you'd get these weird kind of sound. And frequently they'd use that whenever the tall man was going to appear. But a lot of unconventional, out-of-the-box thinking that enhanced this soundtrack that was so important.
Here it is, 40 years since Phantasm has been released. It's become a cult classic. It often appears on critics' lists of the best horror films. Why do you think the film has struck a chord with so many people?
My opinion has evolved over the years, because one of the cool parts about working in the horror genre is that there's a very passionate fan. Some people call them cult.
Yes.
But I call them passionate. They're passionate fans. And the fans congregate at these horror conventions and very much online. So I'm constantly getting feedback as to why. So let me give you a few of the reasons why Phantasm is. I think number one is the basic theme of the movie, which is, what happens when you die? I mean, this is a universal question that everyone on this planet at one point or another thinks about. And it's a pretty strange and surreal answer to that question.
Yeah.
Number two, there's a really strong familial bond in the film that has to do with, you know, loss of the parents and being orphaned, about this tight brotherhood relationship. And they almost have a third brother in this character of Reggie, the ice cream man.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's these three heroes are allied against the forces of evil. You know, it's very strong. But there's one other element to its success that I've learned about in recent years, Doug, is that I meet so many young men who are in their 30s, 40s, and 50s, and they always tell me, you know, when I saw that movie, I just never forgot it, because there was that kid, and he was shooting a shotgun, he was driving his brother's car, he was fighting the undead in a weird way, and not by any design, I created this teen male empowerment movie.
Don Coscarelli is the man behind the indie horror movie Phantasm and the author of True Indie, Life and Death in Filmmaking. His other films include The Beastmaster and Bubba Hotep. Learn more about Don and his films at wpr.org/beta.
You think that when you die, you go to heaven. You come to us.